It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I'm having been burned by many of us. We're burned in 2016 by a lot of these prediction models and all that. I'm not going to predict of who wins a kite flying contest in the midst of a hurricane. But every factor seems to point that the Democrats are going to take the House. The president's low approval ratings, which are at the point where every president has lost the House when they've lost the House or lost one of their chapters. The enthusiasm that's behind the people that are opposed to Trump as opposed to for Trump, that's much 20 points higher enthusiasm advantage. The special elections, money raised, retirements, all of those point to this fact. And the interesting thing about this is these seats that are going, that as of today, are likely to be won by Democrats, but we have 79 more days left in this. Our seats spread across the country. They're in the Northeast, they're in the Midwest, they're in the South, and they're in the West. And so I think the Democrats, but I have two predictions I will make is, get ready for a bumpy ride if the Democrats take the House back in 2019. If we thought we had a fabulous 2017, an exciting time, get ready for when they have the investigative body. And two is, I think one thing that we ought to pay attention to on election night is there's going to be a whole bunch of new leaders emerge that we have not even heard of.
That was Matthew Dowd from ABC, and according to all the prognosticator, he's right about that. It looks like the Democrats are in a really good position to take back the House. There are a lot of reasons why people might be concerned about that. There was another counter protest. This time, the person was in Portland, Oregon, just 2 weeks ago, when there was a lot of violence over the weekend. This one was in Portland. Yeah, this was in Portland, and one man with a Trump hat was beaten. There wasn't quite as much violence, but we can see, this was over gun rights, we can see what's happening in the streets. We know what's happening. We know the enthusiasm of the left is up. But what you might not understand, you do, but you don't, is the vitriol and hatred with which even sitting members in the Democratic Party hate the President of the United States. Alcee Hastings is a congressman from Florida. He was speaking over the weekend at a rally, and this is what he said.
But I will tell you one joke that I learned from Ari Silver, whose father is a former state legislator and is a rabbi, Barry Silver. But Ari asked the audience the other night in Palm Beach County, he said, do you know the difference between a crisis and a catastrophe? And no one held their hand, so Ari answered for us. He says, a crisis is if Donald Trump falls into the Potomac River and can't swim. And he says, and a catastrophe is anybody saves his
That's really funny. And a catastrophe is if anybody saves his blank. All right, so that was Alcee Hastings, a member of the House of Representatives in good standing. And it doesn't take, when they start, it's one thing for Hollywood actresses to brag or laugh about the death of the president. That's bad enough for them to make movies, commercials, showing him, being beheaded, whatever, fill in the blanks. This is the kind of hatred the president of the United States has had to endure. But it's a very different thing when a member of the House of Representatives jokes about his death. I don't remember in all the years that Obama was president and he was so disliked by many people, I don't ever remember anyone joking about him being killed. Can't remember wanting him to be out, joking about other things, but not joking about his life being taken. That's how serious, that's the situation we face. By the way, Sandy Rios with you on this Monday morning. And so in case you missed it last week, I know I sound funny. I know I do. That's because I'm finally having some work done to replace the teeth that I lost during a biking accident 2 years ago. So you'll just have to put up with me until we get this thing fixed. Maybe in the next few days I'll sound a little bit more normal. But right now, you're stuck with me. All right, so a lot of things happened. There's a lot of discussion about that revoking of John Brennan's clearance, security clearance. John Brennan has failed to shut up since that happened. I don't think he had shut up before it was taken away, but this is John Brennan expressing his First Amendment rights. Let's listen.
This is nothing short of treasonous because it is a betrayal of the nation. He is giving aid and comfort to the enemy.
I think Donald Trump has badly sullied the reputation of the office of the presidency. Just so reflective of somebody who, quite frankly, I don't want to use this term maybe, but he's drunk on power. He really is.
Okay, so that was the former CIA director in full form. That's the kinds of things he's been saying for months since President Trump took office. We know that John Brennan was really the leader of the pack in terms of creating this Russia collusion narrative. And there's more to say about that. In fact, Frank Gaffney's going to join us in a few minutes and we'll talk about it with him. But I wanted to just point out that over the weekend, James Clapper, who was the former director of National Intelligence, kind of walked it back. I kind of think these guys know they're in a bit of trouble potentially. Let's listen to what James Clapper had to say.
Do you think that John Brennan's hyperbole is an issue here? Is one of the reasons we're having this crisis?
Well, I think it is. I think, John is sort of like a freight train, and he's going to say what's on his mind. I think, though, that the common denominator among all of us that have been speaking up, though, is genuine concern about the jeopardy or threats to our institutions and values. And although we may express that in different ways, and I think that's what this really is about. But John and his rhetoric have become, I think, an issue.
Yes, an issue. And so now we have all of these former national security types. There's, I think, up to 70 now. Who are, have their knickers in a knot about the removal of John Brennan's clearance and, of course, the potential removal of several other clearances, including James Comey and Susan Rice, Andrew McCabe, Peter Strzok. It goes on and on. The president's talking about removing their clearances, and so they're all very upset. But I want to read something to you. 70 national security, former national security people, including CIA directors, are roundly condemning the president for this. There are several things I could read in response to this. I'm going to pick just a few here. Chris Pronto was the Army Ranger and private security contractor who was part of the CIA team that fought back during the 2012 Benghazi terror attack. I'm sure you've seen Chris Tonto on television when this was, remember they did a long-form interview, the four of them that survived. Just an incredible story. And John Brennan tweeted this. This action is part of a broader effort by Mr. Trump to suppress freedom of speech and punish critics. It should gravely worry all Americans, including intelligence professionals, about the cost of speaking out. My principles are worth far more than clearances. I will not relent. So Chris Tonto responds this way. My principles are greater than clearances too, John, especially when you and the CIA Kool-Aid drinkers punished us for not going along with the Benghazi cover-up story in order to protect you. You put your politics before us. And so Tonto and others had to sign these non-disclosure agreements, and as soon as they came back, they lost their security clearances and were not hailed as heroes in Benghazi, but were encouraged to shut up about what actually happened by John Brennan. And following along the lines of that, I want to read you as much as I can here. I saved a little time here. Charles Faddis is a senior editor and former CIA operative. He is a senior partner with Artemis, a former CIA operations officer with over 30 years of experience, intelligence operations in the Middle East, South Asia, and Europe. His last assignment prior to retirement was as head of the CIA Terrorist Weapons of Mass Destruction Unit. And it goes on. I mean, his credentials are amazing. If I read those, I wouldn't have time to read what he has to say. But let me read parts of it. We are experiencing a crisis in this nation. We are seeing a growing divide between a class of self-important imperial mandarins running our intelligence agencies and the men and women who are on the front lines keeping America safe and fighting this seemingly endless war on terror. It is tearing at the fabric of the intelligence community, and it is adding fuel to the partisan divide. You saw it in the reaction to the Coast attack in 2009, when Al-Qaeda double agent allowed into a CIA base without being searched or in any other manner screened for explosives or weapons, detonated a suicide vest, and killed or wounded effectively the entire complement of key CIA installation. Despite the fact the operation was micromanaged from the highest levels of the agency, a year-long internal inquiry ultimately found that no one was at fault and took no action against anyone. The careers, pensions, and reputations of senior officers at home were far more important than the broken bodies and shattered lives resulting from the attack. Moving on down, he says, you saw it in the nauseating cover-up engineered in the aftermath of the Benghazi attacks of 2012. Four Americans died, including a U.S. ambassador. A diplomatic compound was destroyed. The entire U.S. defense apparatus stood impotent. And only the actions of a handful of intelligence and special operations personnel on the ground prevented an even greater disaster. The bodies were not cold before the lies began, engineered and backstopped by some of the most senior personnel in our intelligence agencies. Political futures were at stake. There was an election to consider. What did the lives of Americans and the security of our nation count as opposed to that? Not one whit. The men who died in Libya meant nothing compared to the powerful men and women in Washington and careers that needed safeguarding. You saw it when Sabrina D'Souza, an American citizen accused of taking part in a CIA rendition operation to capture a radical Islamic cleric on Italian soil, was abandoned to European authorities and shipped off to Italy to serve a 3-year sentence of confinement. No one spoke up in her defense. The only assistance offered Sabrina as she sat in Lisbon awaiting movement to Italy came in the form of American embassy officials who wanted to make sure she was complying with all requirements necessary to make sure that her delivery to Italian authorities went smoothly. Scarcely a word was uttered in policy circles in Washington about the shameful precedent being set by our abandonment of one of our own. You saw it last week when 12 retired senior intelligence and military officers signed on to a letter opposing President Trump's removal of John Brennan's security clearance and protesting against the threat to Mr. Brennan's freedom of speech. Yet I cannot help but note that while they have stood idle in so many previous circumstances, remaining above the fray, staying outside the political realm, action against one of their own, one of the caste of bureaucrats who run our nation, appears to have animated them where other matters have not. He says a lot more, but I want to go down to this. I feel compelled to make this statement to those senior officers who are nowhere to be found when people are dying and abandoned on foreign shores, but work themselves into a white-hot lather at the idea that Mr. Brennan no longer has access to top-secret information. On behalf of all the men and women with muddy boots who spend their lives in the back alleys and remote mountain ranges of the world, keeping the night watch so that their fellow citizens can sleep well in their beds at night, we are not beholden to you. You do not speak for us. If that isn't powerful, I don't know what is. Honestly, it's Charles Battis, senior editor for, I think it's called Ann Magazine. We will put this on our Facebook page. It's The Growing Divide Between Bureaucrats and Frontlines. Excellent piece. And it's something that you will want to read and pass on to your friends to explain what's going on here. Now, we have 70 so-called, well, they're not so-called, they do. They have the credentials to say they're former national security personnel. A lot of CIA operatives are joining on to it, too. But, you know, the pushback and what a lot of people who don't listen to everything, who just get their news from bits and pieces from, you know what I'm talking about, the mainstream media, think that this is a matter of political payback. This is a matter of trying to silence the president's critics. And so we do need to talk about them. We're going to, because Frank Gaffney is joining us next. Frank is a former Undersecretary of Defense under Ronald Reagan, the founder of the Center for Security Policy. Frank knows all about this, and I'm eager to talk to him. I think you'll want to hear it. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
When our health insurance renewal notice arrived last fall, my wife and I made the decision to drop our plan. With the monthly premiums and deductible, we'd have to pay $30,000 just to use it. So we did our homework and switched to MediShare. The cost savings are incredible, over $500 a month, and we don't have to pay for services we don't need or don't agree with. Then, out of the blue, she had to have emergency surgery. Scary stuff. $150,000 in hospital bills, and MediShare members took care of everything. All we paid was our small portion. I'm a doctor who's been in healthcare for 20 years, and this is one of the most impressive programs I've ever seen. Thank God she's fully recovered. And now we're telling everyone about MediShare.
Call 855-PSALM-23 to find out how much you can save on your healthcare. MediShare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Len Ingram of Redeem Clean felt God call him to support the American Family Association.
I'm a laundryman. I'm the son of a laundryman, too. I love clean clothes. I love the business. I love everything about it. This project was built exclusively to support AFA and AFR. There's no strings attached. Another thing that I would like to see come out of this is that I would like to see other business people feel a calling to support ministries, wherever and whatever they do to share the gospel of Jesus Christ.
In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean Laundry Detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and get Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
A history teacher at Lodi High School in California verbally attacked two students for wearing National Rifle Association t-shirts. One of the students was kicked out of the class. Another student was berated. The teacher told the kids guns were bad, that guns kill people. Charlene Craig's daughter was on the receiving end of those remarks. She tells CBS News in Sacramento it's not right for a teacher to attack kids like that. I reached out to the school district and they tell me the teacher was mistaken, that the shirts were not a violation of the dress code. They reached out to both families and apologized. There's no place in a public school classroom for bullies, especially when the bully is teaching the class. And the school district might want to keep an eye on that teacher just to make sure he does not turn his classroom into a left-wing indoctrination center. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I think, John is sort of like a freight train, and he's going to say what's on his mind. But John and his rhetoric have become, an issue in and of itself.
He has been incredibly critical of the president, and I think that has put him in a political place, which actually does more damage for the intelligence community, which is apolitical.
Yeah, maybe. That was in order. James Clapper, the director of national intelligence under President Barack Obama, and Admiral Mike Mullen, who was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, both distancing themselves from at least the method and statements of John Brennan. But that contrasts with the 70 now former intelligence personnel. And in fact, James Clapper was one of the signers of this letter. There's William Webster, George Tenet, Peter Goss, Michael Hayden, Leon Panetta, David Petraeus, John McLaughlin, Mike Morrell, and that's enough. That gives you an idea, who signed a letter condemning the president for revoking the clearance of John Brennan. And then, of course, we have Chris Wallace, one of my favorites. Not. yesterday on Fox News Sunday. And he, first of all, grilled Admiral Mullen. If we have a chance, we'll play more of that. But then he grilled Senator Ron Johnson. And I'm not going to play you what Ron Johnson says. I just want you to hear one of Chris's questions. This is how he asks all of his questions. Here it is.
Just want to put up one more thing here, and that is the backlash, which really spread through the intelligence community and a lot of very senior officials. Let's start here. More than a dozen senior intel officials wrote this. It has nothing to do with who should and should not hold security clearances and everything to do with an attempt to stifle free speech. Some 60 former CIA officers wrote this. The country will be weakened if there is a political litmus test applied before seasoned experts are allowed to share their views. And retired Admiral William McRaven, who led the Special Operations Command that killed bin Laden, wrote this. I would consider it an honor if you would revoke my security clearance as well so I can add my name to the list of men and women who has spoken up against your presidency. I'm sure, Senator, you agree, an awful lot of people on this list that go back to the Reagan administration, in the case of Bill Webster, they bleed red, white, and blue.
They bleed red, white, and blue. All of those national security folks that are upset about John Brennan's security clearance being revoked. Well, is that true? I'm not sure, but I think I know the next person will exactly tell us whether it's true or not. Frank Gaffney is, of course, the founder and president of the Center for Security Policy. And Frank served as Undersecretary of Defense under Ronald Reagan, so he knows a lot of these people. And by the way, he's the host of Secure Freedom Radio, which is heard live 10 to 11 each night, Central Standard Time, on this station. Frank, thanks for joining us this morning.
It's a delight to be with you, Sandy. Thank you so much for having me on.
Frank, I'm so eager, and there's so much to say, but first of all, let's talk about this list. Because you heard Chris Wallace talk about all those people bleed red, white, and blue. So I just love your thoughts about the signers of this initial letter condemning the president for revoking John Brennan's clearance.
Well, there are two letters, as I understand it. One has been signed, as you say, by a number of these intelligence veterans. The other is a shorter list of eminent figures, some Republican, mostly Democrat, who have served in various administrations. Both have a similar kind of bottom line, to be sure, but they are two letters. They're making the case that what President Trump has done with respect to John Brennan's security clearance is somehow untoward or is, at the very minimum, suppressing his freedom of speech, his right to disagree, to even denounce very viciously and very publicly the serving president of the United States. I think both of those are misrepresentations of what's going on here. And in a way, Sandy, if I could just go back to sort of first principles with you for a minute. We're talking about security clearances. And I think it's important to just emphasize the first word is really what this should be understood to be all about. Security. Security of classified information. I've had clearances in the past. I'm very familiar with the process by which one receives them and has some experience with, you know, people who abuse that. privilege. And it is a privilege to have access to the classified secrets of the United States government. And I can tell you that what is going on, it seems to me, in this present controversy, and more generally in our country, is what I've bemoaned often on our program and in my commentaries that you're kind enough to air on your program, is a sort of diminished mindfulness about national security. And when you do that, you sort of get to a point where you say, well, you know, a guy who happened to have served in a senior position or a number of senior positions in John Brennan's case is entitled to have access to those secrets and to basically do with them as he sees fit. That's not correct. You are given access to classified information because you have been carefully evaluated and screened, and specifically your conduct, which bespeaks your judgment as well as your associations, have entitled the government to feel as though you will handle that classified information properly. And I have to tell you that going back to John Brennan's announced vote, I don't think it was announced before he got his clearances, frankly, but his announced vote for Gus Hall, the longtime Communist Party candidate for president of the United States, should have been one of those things that says to the government of the United States and the people doing the background investigation, you know, this guy's got a problematic past. But certainly where we are today, Sandy, and just to finish this long answer to your question, certainly where we are today, based on the behavior of John Brennan, the behavior we've learned about in terms of what he did as Central Intelligence Agency director to try to, I believe, prevent Donald Trump from becoming president of the United States, and then before he left office, as the new president came in, despite his best efforts, what he has done to try to sabotage his presidency, both in government and now out on MSNBC and NBC, bespeaks a lack of judgment and a conduct that should prompt any sensible security officer to say, you know, this guy is behaving in a manner that does not allow us to continue to entrust him with access to classified information. And I just have to say, I'm shocked and I'm deeply troubled that even people that some have called mandarins in the foreign policy establishment, even intelligence professionals, don't seem to get. That's what's going on here, and that is entirely appropriate, given, I think, what the president has seen, that he acted as he has done to remove John Brennan's security clearances.
You know what, Frank, that actually struck me also yesterday when I was watching Mullen's full interview with Chris Wallace. He was obviously clueless about the deeper issues. It was just apparent to me that because he was addressing this as though we don't want to politicize security clearances. Well, we don't really, do we? We don't want to make them people objects of punishment because they're Democrats or Republicans or they disagree on issues. And I could interject, and maybe we'll come back to this. We know that the left does this all the time. You and I know. We could name tons of examples of people who have been punished. In fact, I just read about the Benghazi contractors who came back after the 2012 Benghazi attack and lost their security clearances because they were instructed to walk the party line under CIA Director John Brennan and not talk about really what happened in Benghazi. They lost their security clearances. That's just one example. But Mullen he kept emphasizing that this was like we couldn't make it political. Well, nobody wants to do that, but it's already happening, and I don't think the president is doing this. It's not about political motives. It might be part of it, but it is not the nut of it. And maybe you could expand on that further, Frank.
Look, I think what John Brennan is doing is conduct that raises questions, as I said, about both his past conduct and what he's engaged in at the moment. And I mentioned the vote for Gus Hall. He has been, and a friend of mine, Sam Faddis, has written a very punchy response to these mandarins in pointing out, among other things, the sorts of conduct that John Brennan engaged in office, which were deeply political. John Brennan, ironically, did more to politicize the intelligence community of the United States than any other director in the CIA's history. He is a political operative. So the question of whether that fellow should have been entrusted with any of these jobs is one that ought to be addressed as well. But I think what the president is doing here, properly understood, speaks to a sense that we are watching someone whose conduct, particularly in public, means that he should not be entrusted with classified information going forward. The same should be said, by the way, about Hillary Clinton, for heaven's sakes. If anything, we've learned about Hillary Clinton's conduct in office, Her security clearances should be pulled. And I suspect that there are others who might be similarly considered to be bad security risks who still have clearances simply because they had them before, and it's a courtesy to continue to extend them. So I think the president's right to look hard at this. We as a country need to look hard at what is being done, what has been done. Do you know, Sandy, that there was a period during which, I believe beginning in the Clinton administration, if I'm not mistaken, the people entrusted with doing background investigations, which again are part and parcel of this clearance process, something called the U.S. Investigative Service, they were charged with cleaning up something like 600,000 backlogged clearance applications. And they simply, in the words of the investigators, flushed them, meaning that 600-some thousand people, as I recall, were given access to security clearances and therefore to secret information without having any background investigation done at all. They just pretended that they had done it to fill a quota. This is, again, the sort of thing that requires a real national debate about what have we done, who have we given these clearances to, and are they advisable, is it advisable to continue entrusting them with access to classified information? John Brennan is the tip of a big iceberg, and we ought to regard it as such.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this list that the president gave of other potential people was James Comey, Michael Hayden, who you've heard from, Sally Yates, Susan Rice, Andrew McCabe, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, his lover, and Bruce Orr at Justice. Now, there's a story about each one of them, but the one person that sticks out to me in this moment, Frank, is Susan Rice, who was very involved in unmasking American citizens illegally by virtue of a phone wire, whatever you want to call it, intelligence gathering through phone calls. And Susan was in the middle of unmasking, revealing private conversations, which is illegal. How in the world could she still have a security clearance? And why would that be egregious?
Well, as I said, if you disregard either the conduct that is illegal or the conduct that is simply at odds with sensible national security practices, if you disregard associations with people who are absolutely hostile to this country, notably the Muslim Brotherhood, if you are prepared to sort of turn a blind eye to the fact that there's a serious potential that those folks will continue to behave without due regard for security considerations, as they speak publicly, as they campaign against this president, as they seek to undermine his presidency, or otherwise advance their own agenda. This is the sort of thing that ought to have impact on whether they're entitled to have access, that privileged access to classified information, because there's every reason to believe, I think, at least in some of these cases, that they might abuse that access again, to the detriment of our country. And again, I just want to emphasize this, folks. We're talking about the security of the United States in a time that is very dangerous. We have actual enemies who are seeking access to this information and who we know are exploiting it against us. It is the height of irresponsibility not to be understanding where you have reason to believe people do not handle classified information properly, they should not be allowed to have the opportunity to do it in the future.
Frank Gaffney's my guest, Center for Security Policy, and you can hear him every night from 10 to 11 on this network at Secure Freedom Radio. And you're going to hear him in just a second because he does a commentary for us each and every morning. Frank, can you stay with us one more segment?
I'd love to.
Okay, we're going to talk about, I really want to know if you think these national security experts are complicit with the deep state or they're just ignorant. That's just one question I want to ask you. Stay tuned. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Then Saul clothed David with his armor. He put a helmet of bronze on his head and clothed him with a coat of mail. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. 40 days of twice daily taunting from Goliath sent Saul and the Israelite army reeling in fear. But David's passion for Yahweh, conviction, and full persuasion stirred King Saul. When people are on fire for God, it often provokes others to glob on to that fire. But we must be careful to resist the well-meaning overtures of the flameless bystanders. Saul meant well, but his armor couldn't help. It would only slow David down.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with the Life and Liberty Minute. A beautiful but naive young couple, Jay Austin and Laura Gogan, set out on a round-the-world bike trip to prove that the world is not a big scary place because evil is only a make-believe concept and people are basically generous and wonderful and kind. Their theory was put to the ultimate test when they rode through Tajikistan, a country controlled by the devout Muslim fundamentalists of ISIS. An ISIS-driven car plowed directly into them, and then five jihadis piled out of the car and knifed them to death. Muhammad commanded his devotees to slay the idolaters wherever you find them. This couple found out too late that many Muslims take this command seriously. More proof that Islam is not, in fact, a religion of peace.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Here's Dr. Ben Witherington from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
Without the Jesus of history, there is no Jesus of faith. The assumption that there is a non-theological, non-divine, non-miraculous Jesus somewhere to be found at the bottom of the well of history is a myth, because as far back as we can go into the Jesus tradition, he's still always seen as the Son of Man and the Son of God. He's still always seen as someone who performed miracles. He's not just a talking head, and you have to deal with the passion narrative. You can't come up with a Jesus that you sort of excise the passion narrative from the story. There was no such Jesus.
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Iran's foreign minister marked the 65th anniversary of an American-backed coup that toppled a hostile and oppressive government in Tehran by vowing the United States' new Iran Action Group won't have the same effect. He's likely right. For one thing, the official policy of the Trump administration is not regime change in Iran. For another, the Iran Action Group is being run by the State Department, not the CIA. But even if President Trump wants to help the Iranian people liberate themselves from a Sharia kleptocracy that oppresses them and threatens us, and wants the Action Group to do that, putting Brian Hook in charge ensures it won't happen. Hook is deeply hostile to Trump and has, to date, used his top job at state to save the Obama bomb deal and prop up Iran's regime. Personnel is policy, and Hook's is not Trump's. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
As I just discussed with Admiral Mullen, we're not just talking about John Brennan. There are nine other people who were on the list that Sarah Huckabee Sanders read in the White House briefing room. 10 people in all, including Brennan. And the one thing they all have in common is, to varying degrees, they all have been critics of this president. Here's what Senator Mark Warner, the top Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee, had to say about this.
These people were being singled out to have either their clearances revoked or in the process of being revoked. To me, smacks of Nixonian-type practices of trying to silence anyone who's willing to criticize this president.
And he compared it, as Admiral Mullen did, to an enemies list. If you want to clean this up, Why not reform it and take away all the security clearances of all former officials? Why go after your political critics?
There you go. Chris Wallace putting it so well, if you're on the left, and I think he is. Sandy Rios back with you. My guest is Frank Gaffney. Frank is the founder of Center for Security Policy. You just heard him with his commentary. He is a national treasure, I have to say. And Frank, of course, served as an Undersecretary of Defense under the Reagan administration. So this is his bailiwick. And by the way, Frank mentioned earlier the Charles Faddis article, The Growing Divide Between Bureaucrats and Front Lines. You may recall I read that, at least a part of that, to you in the opening segment, and it's on our Facebook page. And could I just also add, if you want to see what we're posting on Facebook, you're going to have to go to the Facebook page every day, because it's not going to come in your feed anymore. You know that, right? I think we're down. I was looking at it just over the weekend. I was seeing like maybe we'd have two or three comments where we used to have thousands of people sharing your articles. So if you want to see what we're posting, you'll need to go to our Facebook page and read it. So I hope you'll make a practice of doing that. Frank, you heard Chris Wallace's, just in his question, it's Nixonian. The thing that these people have in common, that list of McCabe, Susan Rice, Sally Yates, Michael Hayden, James Comey, Lisa Page, Peter Strzok, and Brzezinski, is that they don't like the president. That's why they're being targeted. I just want you to respond.
Well, I don't know to what degree that has any bearing on this. There is unquestionably, in each of these cases, conduct that has demonstrated an abuse of classified information or a propensity to behave in ways that would disqualify someone from having access to classified information. And I think that's where we ought to start. Look, the idea of getting rid of everybody's clearances who's ever served in the United States government, is a draconian measure that would probably be quite harmful to the national security, because there are lots of good people who have served in government who are still helping government, or various agencies thereof, at least, do the work that we need them to have. Security clearances, the work that we need them to do. In other words, this is the sort of thing that I believe benefits from just getting down to the facts. And you asked a question before we took the break, Sandy, that I think we ought to return to. Are the people that have been identified by the White House press spokeswoman people who are complicit or ignorant of what the deep state is up to? Well, I would argue that most of those people are themselves creatures of the deep state. You know, this has been part of the problem. John Brennan was actively involved in, as I said earlier, trying to stop Donald Trump from being president and using the CIA to try to undermine his presidency as he was coming into office. That is a serious problem. And whether they're part of the deep state or whether they're simply emboldening the deep state by their behavior or enabling it, I think it does come down to disqualifying them from retaining access to classified information. That's what this is all about, as far as I'm concerned, and should be all about.
And just to take it further, Frank, it happens to be Donald Trump. That's his name. That's the president right now. But the attack that John Brennan has led and these people have been complicit with is an attack against our constitutional structure. We have a duly elected president, and whether they like him personally or not, he has been elected by the people. This is a subversion of the Constitution, a subversion of our system to bend it to their will. That's their crime. I'm going to using the word crime, not meaning literally crime, although in normal times it probably should be a crime. But they are trying to subvert the will of the American people, which is unconstitutional in very underhanded and devious ways. That's the problem. They all played their various roles, and they did terrible things in the process, putting our country at tremendous risk. So,
yeah, you know, I did a commentary on this last week, which you aired, talking about a technique of political warfare that is well honed by the left and is much in evidence at the moment, including in this case. It's called deflection. It's the practice of blaming somebody else for doing what you yourself are doing. And honestly, I think, as you just said, Sandy, what John Brennan has been doing since the campaign was, a treasonous involvement in trying to subvert our constitutional processes. An abuse of his powers at the Central Intelligence Agency, and in his role now, he is simply deflecting attention, or trying desperately to deflect attention from the proper scrutiny that activity, the pattern of activity, more to the point, should receive.
Frank, let's talk for a second about what we know, and certainly what you know, about the use of the revoking or refusal to grant security clearances to various conservatives. Maybe it even goes back to the Clinton administration. I don't know, but I'm more familiar with what happened in the Obama administration. Can you give examples of how this is, again, the left accusing the conservatives of doing what they've been doing for a long time, but we should put some flesh on that. What do you know about that?
Well, during the Obama years, the question that worried me most was the granting of clearances to people who shouldn't have them, as opposed to taking clearances away or preventing clearances from being given to people who should, simply because I think the latter weren't generally being employed by the administration. There is one prominent example, which I think sort of evolved in the period as the Obama administration was winding down, where an Obama appointee by the name of James Baker in the Office of Net Assessment decided to retaliate against a very good man by the name of Adam Lovinger by taking away his clearances for Lovinger having pointed out that office was being used in the course of the campaign to hire and engage Seth Halper, this character that has turned up in London and seemingly was involved in trying to penetrate the Trump campaign. He also, by the way, pointed out, Adam Lovinger did, that Hillary Clinton's daughter Chelsea's best friend had been given a contract by this Office of Net Assessment in the Pentagon in a way that made it look as though this was some sort of political favor and inappropriate, and actually was causing very real concerns for some of our allies with whom she was being assigned to work. For these reasons, a very good, honorable, and I think important public servant was punished by the Clinton team, or at least by the Obama administration official, in this case, James Baker. And that drama is still playing out. We've seen a recent article in the Washington Times about it, the Wall Street Journal. This is, again, an example of the sort of thing that I believe those who are trying to deflect our attention to other questions of security clearances, just don't want you to pay attention to. But the bigger problem, again, Sandy, and I can't emphasize this enough, is those of us on or listening to this radio program have a vital interest in having government secrets. It's critical. I've been entrusted with them in the past. I know that this is an important part of government, especially in a dangerous world. And we have to assume, we have to be able to count on our government to ensure that only people who can reliably handle that information in confidence are entrusted with it. They don't lie. They don't leak. They don't otherwise use this information for political warfare purposes. And I think it's evident from what is in the public record, especially with respect to John Brennan, but some of these other characters as well, that one or more of those reasons to consider them not eligible for the state stewardship of our classified information apply.
It is amazing. You know, you were absolutely right. I would just say to add icing on the cake. I guess that's the opposite. This would be the mud on the dredge. Adam Lovinger was not able to get hired in the White House because he lost his security clearance, because he was a whistleblower against Stephen Halper, who was the one who set up George Papadopoulos and started this whole thing. It's really a sordid tale. So Adam was lost his security clearance, and he's still, you know, he's got small children. I mean, these things have real life percussions. And Adam's not the only example, Frank. I know there were others who were trying to serve Trump who couldn't get security clearances. And I also know for a fact, personally, I know this, that there is an effort to withhold security clearances from people who have the wrong politics. And so it has been used as a weapon. So it has to stop. On for both counts, those that can't qualify and get them and those that should be qualified and can't get them. We do need to clean house on this. Frank, I want to ask you something personal about your show, because I want people to really tune in and listen to you. First of all, what kinds of things are you talking about, like this week's on Secure Freedom Radio?
Well, as an example, we're going to spend a full hour today talking with a remarkable man, a Renaissance man, I call him, by the name of Dr. Andrew Bostom. I think you may know, Sandy, he has written extensively about some of these sorts of problems, particularly with respect to the nature of jihad and the Sharia doctrine that impels it, and the people who practice that doctrine, and what they're doing inside our own country as well as abroad. A man who has been very much involved in some of that is, as it happens, John Brennan. And Andrew Bostom has recently posted a very interesting analysis of Brennan's history, as well as his master's thesis, which speaks of a sympathy for Stalinism, if you can believe it, that again raises questions about his judgment and a very serious problem. In other words, our program tries to deal with topical issues, giving people what I call an intelligence briefing about them from people who are deeply knowledgeable about them, the best experts I can find, and we think it's a great privilege to be able to do that on the American Family Radio Network, and I'm so grateful to you and your friends there for helping us do it.
I'm thrilled that you're part of the AFR Talk family, Frank. And it's at 10 to 11 Central Standard Time, Secure Freedom Radio. When you mentioned that Brennan's Stalinist defense, that made me think of Nellie Orr, wife of Bruce Orr, who serves in the State Department, who's on the list potentially to lose his security clearance, and Nellie Orr's Russian past, where she defends Joseph Stalin, the murderous dictator. So it just goes on and on, these happy little links between the left, their subversion, and things that are making headlines. Frank Gaffney, it's always a pleasure. Secure Freedom Radio, 10 to 11 Central Standard Time. And also, it's securefreedom.org, right? Your website?
That's it.
Yeah, Secure.
Thank you,
Freedom.
Sandy, so much for having me today.
My pleasure, Frank. Talk to you soon. All right, well, Sandy Rios with you again in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.